and welcome to the EDH Retcast. My name is Joey Schultz, and I'm joined as always by my fantastic co-hosts. First up, when Guillaume Master Chef, the new Golgari cook from Strixhaven, starts making up those food tokens, he knows that he's going to go asking Guillaume for seconds and for thirds. This is Matt Morgan.
You know, contrary to popular belief, when you pass away, it's actually your eyes that die last because, you know, pupils are known to dilate.
I appreciate it. I can get behind that one.
Did you see what I did there?
I see what you did there. Love it. Up next, he doesn't care about Guillaume's food tokens at all, but he does want to know if Guillaume is hiding a rat colony deck underneath his chef's hat, because then he can recreate the entire Ratatouille musical just in the commander deck. It's Dana Roach.
Having seen the initial spoiled cards for Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, I'm getting kind of into the idea of a D&D set. So I'm mostly hoping we keep getting really on-theme cards. Rain of Mountain Dew feels like the kind of thing that would really match the set. Storm of Cheeto Dust maybe is the kind of thing that I think is really going to fit in. So I am officially now on board with this whole thing.
Life imitates art, and sometimes I hope that your art imitates life, Dana. That's terrific. Anyway, this is the EDH Retcast. EDH Rec is the best deck building resource on the web for the commander format, compiling data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new commander decks. And here on the EDH Retcast, what we like to do is give all that data a little more context. Dana, tell us, what is it that we're talking about in this week's episode?
Yeah, today we're going to be talking about the different kinds of card draw, and as far as I can tell, that's really only the one where you draw cards and lose life. So we'll discuss that. It should be a pretty fast show.
Good to know where your head's at. Yeah, no, this has been a really big listener request, is for us to cover some of the most popular types of card advantage spells in Commander, but also their place within the Commander decks and how they can work within Commander decks. Because card draw, as it turns out, is really, really nuanced. It's a pretty big blanket term for a lot that's going on underneath that umbrella. So before we get to our main topic, which should be a whole bunch of fun, we are going to pause real quick and give a huge thank you to the folks at the Command Zone podcast. They handle all of the post-production work on our podcast here, making it look as awesome as it does. And we want to thank our sponsors for the show, too.
The EDH Retcast is sponsored by Card Kingdom and TCG Player. If you are not sure if the new portable hole card is from Forgotten Realms or from the Upper Deck 1991 Looney Tunes trading card series, Card Kingdom will make sure you get the right card from the right set for the right price. Similarly, if you're worried the Vorpal Sword you're ordering might accidentally be from the 1974 Alice in Wonderland Wonderbread trading card set, TCG Player will make sure you get the right one as well. Simply go to EDH Rec and click on the card in question, choose the vendor link down below, and doing so supports both the site and the show.
Dana, that was the most magical sponsorship plug in the entire... I hope that people weren't skipping past the sponsorships so that they could hear that. That was terrific.
I just read the copy they sent me, Joey.
Uh-huh, I'm sure. Anyway, what else do we got going on, Matt?
Well, all we have is just patreon.com/EDHRetcast. There's nothing exuberant like Dana's pitch there. My live read today, I'm sorry, folks, is off kilter because Dana just slayed me, as it were, with his plus 20 words of warding against me. But anyways, yep. patreon.com/EDHRetcast is where you can support us directly. We have all sorts of different patron tiers, whether you want to join the Discord community and let Dana know personally, you know, face to face that, hey, this Vorpal Sword, what's going on here? Alice in Wonderland doesn't fit into these perfect fits that I got. You can do that at patreon.com/EDHRetcast. We even have a very special tier where we just give thanks to somebody for just being a patron. That's simple as it is. It's pretty great. So Dan Mui, thank you so much for being a patron. We definitely appreciate it, Dan. And, we look forward to you joining and letting Dana know that whatever those special off-kilter TCGs that he got, they're weird.
They are weird indeed. Thank you so much, Dan. And there's also one more thing. I know we want to get to the show topic, but man, we are so excited for this other announcement here too, because one of our other sponsors here on the show is altersleeves.com, and you can visit altersleeves.com/EDHRetcast, and if you buy sleeves from there using that code, it shows your support for the show. That's not the only thing, though. It's not just like, oh, it's a sponsorship. No, we have our own custom sleeves that we are finally ready to announce. So you can go to altersleeves.com/EDH Retcast and purchase your own custom EDH Retcast member sleeves. Each one of us has put our likeness onto a sleeve. The art is done by Andre Garcia, fan of the show, terrific artist. You can see each of us as one of our sort of signature cards, I might say. I get to be represented as a Sir Conrad the Grim, which is awesome. I get to do so much damage as Sir Conrad. Matt, not to be outdone, is an EDH Reclamation Sage. It's just terrific work. And Dana, I'm so happy with yours because all the card draw that we're going to be talking about in this episode, we get to see you on a Reliquary Tower, making sure that you hold on to all of those cards.
So yeah, if you're wondering why that Reliquary Tower is leaning in the art, it's my fault for leaning on it.
Yeah, this is just so terrific. We are also going to be having a patron exclusive sleeve coming up soon. It's not quite done yet, but it will only be available for our patrons. It's really, really awesome. But these ones are available for you to buy. It's just such great work. Andre just hit it out of the park. And Matt, I look forward to using you as an EDH Reclamation Sage to destroy your own artifacts and enchantments in the next games we play.
Well, I mean, I was actually already on a Magic card. Enthralling Victor is actually my likeness put onto a Magic card. But I didn't, you know, I asked them to change the face a little bit. I don't need people coming up to me and saying, hey, but I'm ready now to finally like announce my likeness is on a card.
Mm-hmm. Matt, I definitely believe you. That was definitely your first appearance on a Magic card. Definitely agree with you there. Anyway, folks, that once again is altersleeves.com/EDH Retcast. It's really, really awesome. But that's probably enough with all of the sponsorship stuff. Let's get to our main topic. We're talking about card draw, specifically the different types of card advantage stuff that goes on in EDH. Card draw is just huge, which is probably why this has been such a highly requested topic from listeners, because it's, I mean, Dana, would you say it's probably like one of the most important categories in your deck?
Yeah, persistent card draw is card draw attached to a permanent in play that's almost always repeatable. My favorite one of these effects is probably definitely Sylvan the Library. Does all the things I want. It gives you card draw. It gives you card selection. You can choose to not draw and just pick the card you want. Lets you pay life for cards. Interacts with cool things like abundance. So, you know, if I'm playing a green deck, there's a really good chance I'm putting a Sylvan Library into it.
And Matt, your thoughts? Are you a card drawing fiend like Dana is?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a fiend like Dana. Dana definitely qualifies as like a mesmeric fiend for card draw. I would say I'm definitely a fan. And I mean, it's just one of those major categories in any deck. Like, you need to have some sort of way that you're keeping up with the advantages that other people are doing. And oftentimes, like, card draw is one way to kind of cover up a lot of those weaknesses that you might have in a deck, no matter what colors you're in. Finding a way to incorporate some sort of card draw, or at least card advantage, you know, card draw isn't, or card advantage, I should say, isn't always in just pure draw. And not to get, like, into the card design theoretical areas, but there's card velocity, there's card advantage, there's all sorts of different things that you can kind of categorize it into. We're going to be a little more bird's eye view. We're not going to delve deep into game theory on this episode.
Oh, very much. Like, there are so many different types of card advantage spells out there, thousands, literally, that we're invariably going to end up missing some of them.
Yeah, there's so many. It's just impossible to cover everything about every aspect of card draw in one episode for a Commander game.
One thing worth noting about card draw here, obviously card draw is strategically beneficial to the deck you play. It's also fun. It's fun to draw cards, number one, but it's fun when you're playing a deck to see more cards, because the more cards you see, the more ways you have to play that deck out, the more paths you have that appear in front of you. That's what allows you to see the new cards you added in, the cards you changed out, and lets you basically like take the decks down the different routes it can possibly go. It lets it play a different way every time.
Yeah, no one wants to be stuck top decking over the course of an hour-long game. So it is an integral way to make sure that you don't get stuck in exactly that scenario. But there are a lot of different ways that you can go about it. And different deck types want different types of card advantage. So that's kind of what we're going to tackle here. We'll go through some different types and hopefully highlight some of the different deck archetypes or different reasons that you might want those specific versions of card advantage. We'll start off with some consistent draw effects, the things that are going to sustain you over a longer game, because they will, without you needing to pay a bunch of extra mana, for example, they'll just give you extra stuff coming in. I feel like Rhystic Study is probably the first example that we have to shout out here, or stuff like Phyrexian Arena, another really classic one where you draw extra cards and other people have to pay to stop you, or you'll just pay a little bit of extra life as it happens, but you're just always going to get cards coming in. And so as turns go on over the course of a long game, you'll get more cards.
I'm a big fan of Sylvan the Library in this category, which I mentioned. Two mana is very, very efficient for a card that lets you get two additional cards every single turn. I mentioned I love paying life for cards. It's life's a resource, and if you don't use it trading it for cards, someone's just going to take it from you anyway. So you might as well use it all up.
Well, and one thing I noticed about the cards you guys are throwing out is they're pricey cards, because like card draw is just inherently so extremely powerful in a commander game that everybody wants these. And, you know, when the more people that want these cards, they get a little more expensive. But I have one. Well, it's me, so it's on a creature, duh. but Nezahal Primal Tide is a fantastic card. Like, if you are in the instance where, you know, like Joey set up, you're top decking, you only have one card, Nezahal Primal Tide is going to catch you up extremely fast. So Nezahal is just 5 blue-blue for a 7/7 Elder Dinosaur. It's kind of in the same cycle that the Itali Primal Storm was back from Ixalan. But it's just, the spell can't be countered. You have no maximum hand size, so you have Reliquary Tower type of effects built in. And then whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, you draw a card. So it just, there's no Rhystic Study type of tax on it. It's just you're going to be drawing cards right away. And then Nezahal also is kind of hard to remove. You can discard 3 cards, and then you basically flicker Nezahal. So like there's built-in protection there. It's just, it does so much, and it's a dollar compared to a lot of these other staples that we kind of mentioned already.
Yeah, I like to call that one the grown-up version of Mystic Remora, which also draws you cards when other people cast non-creature spells. But those ones, even though the first turn you play them, they're not going to net you any cards, over the course of enough turns, they are going to net you cards. And that can be really good if your deck likes to sustain itself. If you know for a fact that your deck is going to last a couple of turns longer, and it's not like a very aggro type of deck, that can really sustain you over the course of a longer game. And it's something that you can maybe manipulate. If you like having your card draw on creatures like Matt does, I love reanimating things like Nezahal all the time.
Well, and the nice thing about Nezahal too is it scales with how powerful, you know, your opponents are playing. Mm-hmm. So if they're casting 4 or 5 spells per turn, like you're drawing 4 or 5 cards, and like just one turn of that, like it doesn't matter if you don't get to untap with Nezahal, because if they did that, then I mean you already caught back up.
Yeah. But Matt, since you talked about, you know, draw that is in some relation to creatures, let's actually move to that, because that is kind of its own category too. Card draw that happens when you play creatures or when your creatures enter the battlefield. What are some examples that hop to your mind when it comes to that slightly different version of the category?
Well, I mean, how much time do you have? Because this is where I could just talk for a whole episode. But I think my favorite that's come out in recent years is Guardian Project. That's just an enchantment for 3 and a green. And man, if you're casting creatures, you're having them enter the battlefield, Guardian Project is just going to draw you a lot of cards. If you're playing 30, 35 creatures, you probably want to consider Guardian Project and make that. I mean, it's a $10 card now, but like that's a major investment towards just the quality of your deck if you're casting that many creatures.
It's already in over 36,000 decks,
it's Guardian such, Project. That it's card's such an amazing card.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these things kind of count for multiple categories. You know, Guardian Project is a permanent draw spell functionally, but it's also one that's tied to a creature. It's a creature draw spell. In this case, I would count it as a creature draw spell because it primarily cares about creatures, and that's where the ceiling is. If you are playing in a heavy creature deck, that's what's going to turn Guardian Project into a crazy strong card.
Oh, goodness.
And things like this that reward you for doing the thing green already wanted to be doing, in this case, casting creatures, are one of the reasons people tend to cite green as being the strongest color in Commander.
Yeah, green will get card draw just tacked onto a random Zendikar Resurgent. And like that front loading, like immediately refunding your creature when you've played the creature, that's huge, because then even if you get blown out by, you know, board wipes or something, you were rewarded with a card in hand just for playing the creature. Like, that's not an effect that green has always had. Usually green would have to wait a turn to be able to draw cards off of its creatures. But now the card draw is coming front loaded. And I feel like that completely has changed the game for green and made it very, very powerful.
I mean, considering that cantrips are a category all to their own, turning every single creature into a cantrip is insanely powerful. If you're playing, like I said, even if you're playing 20, 25 creatures, any of these effects can be extremely powerful for you, and you can draw 4 or 5 cards very, very easily over the course of just a couple turns.
Yeah. Now there is a white version of this, Mentor of the Meek, which you can pay to draw if you've got tiny creatures. I don't know if that one's falling out of favor for most people. I feel like it is in my experience. But Matt, I know that you have a particular penchant for a version that is still not yet printed in paper called Inspiring Commander.
you're going to get me on an Azuri Claw progress style rant here. You are correct. Mentor the Meek has started to fall out of favor. It would have completely fallen out of favor if we could get Inspiring Commander. That is a card that is only available on Arena for some reason. But that would be such a wonderful addition to paper Magic. So Watsy, if you're hearing this, which I know you are, you love the EDH Ratcast. We know you do. But please, if a place for Inspiring Commander would be such a great addition to paper Magic.
Yeah, that is a white card that draws cards when you get tiny creatures for free. Like, there's no extra mana payment. It just does it for you. Like, it's one of the best card draw spells in white that just hasn't seen paper print. Watsy, please. But instead of ranting about that, we'll move on to another type of card draw category. Let's just some one-shot draw spells. Just quick refill. They don't rely upon you having specific stuff in play or any specific life payments. Dana, talk us through a handful of one-shot draw spells that catch your eye.
Yeah, in this category, you have things like Treasure Cruise or Dig Through Time, two cards that from the cons block that broke every format but Commander, essentially, where they are just really good draw options. Just one of those weird quirks of Commander, I guess. You know, yes, you need things in your graveyard for them to be as efficient as possible, but Commander is a format where you tend to have things in your graveyard very, very frequently. What's nice about these is they're always going to get you stuff. You know, Guardian Project, for example, which we talked about, you do need to be casting creature spells to take advantage of that. And that's not always something you can rely on if you don't already have cards in hand. You need cards in hand to draw cards. Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time, you can just kind of cast them and come out ahead.
And I feel like this is a category where we start to see some of the most diversity. Like Mystic Confluence is a counterspell that can also draw you cards if you need it in a pinch. Or there's Factor Fiction, where you kind of don't know what necessarily you're going to get. Or X spells, Pull from Tomorrow is another example. So there's a lot of variability when it comes to the one-shot draw spell options out there.
Yeah, and the next category kind of has some overlap with this one too, where it's just you cast one spell and it leaves you with more cards in hand than before. But one that I love that was a challenge stats of mine a while ago, Secrets of the Golden City. It's either a divination or it's better than a divination. Mm-hmm. It's just a great just one-shot effect to get you that quick jolt of card advantage back into your hand, and you just keep trucking through the rest of the turn.
Well, and already I feel like this is the category where we're starting to see some of the value that comes from having a diverse spread of card advantage effects within your deck. Harmonize is a color break by all means because it is a green card draw spell that doesn't rely upon you having creatures in play. But that is a nice piece of diversity, I think. Like that is a thing that you can use even if you've got no creatures in play compared to the other draw spells in your deck that might be dead if your opponents have been wrathing the board over and over again. So already we're seeing how it can be really important to have different types of these draw effects within your 99.
I mean, this category and the next one are 100%, you know, those Dana Roach specials, the high floor type of cards where you always know what you're going to get. You always know you're going to get some amount of cards for some amount of mana that is an advantage on that single turn.
That's definitely something I pay attention to for sure. You don't only want these kind of conservative draw effects in your deck. That really limits your chance to hit a home run, to use a baseball analogy. You do want plenty of these things that are the equivalent of, I guess, a single or a double, so you can get guys on base for when you hit a home run. That's a really tortured baseball analogy at this point.
These cards are Derek Jeter. They're not going to hit home runs all the time, but they're going to get on base every single time.
Good job, Matt. Thank you.
And Derek Jeter, for the Joseph that doesn't know, is a baseball player who does sports.
Thank you. I was just like, are you guys deliberately trying to confuse me? What's going on?
I mean, Dana confused himself, if you couldn't tell.
I did. I lost the narrative thread there but by the end of the baseball analogies.
Well, let's ground Dana a little bit more, get him back to earth by giving him the category of some life payment draw options, which to my understanding, Dana, is apparently your favorite thing to do in Commander ever.
I said it before, life is a resource, and if you don't trade it for cards, someone's going to take it. You might as well use it up.
I like that philosophy a lot. Sylvan Library is also very happy that you feel this way.
Absolutely. These are cards, they tend to be in black, although Sylvan Library is in green, kind of the weird old exception from back when the color pie wasn't really very carefully monitored. but black tends to have effects that let you draw slightly more efficiently at the cost of giving up some life. So the kind of the efficient Holy Trinity I talk about are Knight's Whisper, Sign in Blood, and Read the Bones. They're useful on turn 2. They're useful on turn 15. As long as you have a couple of life to spare, you can get those cards in your hand. And they don't necessarily mess up your turn either. Like, you can still play the spell you want to play and also cast those to come out cards ahead.
That's interesting to know. But you also don't play as many lots of colors decks, so that might inform you there. These are just like, I love these. I love Necropotence with all my heart. I love paying life to put a card aside and I'll put it in my hand at the end of it. Like, that thing is so darn good. Matt, you don't seem to play a lot of black in your deck, so I feel like we're maybe outside of your comfort zone, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know what you're talking about, because the last time we played at twitch.tv/EDHRetcast, I was playing my Ukima and Khazzar deck, which does play the, as Dana put it, the trinity of card draw with the Painful Truths and Sign and Blood cards. But one actually that has surprised me with how well it's been performing lately has been Stinging Study. Like, every time that I've seen that card cast, whether it's for me or against me, that card has done really, really well. It's from the new Commander 21 set, where it's just 4 and a black for an instant where you draw X cards and lose X life, where X is the mana value of a commander you control in on the battlefield or in the command zone. Mm-hmm. That can be insanely powerful. Like, if I had that in my Vivictus Asmati deck, like, that's lose 6, draw 6. At instant speed, I can just hold up 5 mana, and at the end of turn, draw a bunch of cards. Like, that's such a great effect.
Yeah. The danger with these, of course, is that there are games where you end up at 3 life, and then you're like Dana saying, oh man, I can't draw extra cards because I don't have the life to spare. And sometimes he's the reason that he's at so little life because of how much life he's been paying to draw cards. So again, you probably want a good diverse spread if it's available to your deck. You don't just want to be paying life to draw cards, because that is, while a big resource, still a finite one. So having some diversity there is probably pretty important.
See, Joey, where you see a challenge, I see an opportunity. If you draw one of those cards and you're at 1 life, that's when you just go out on your own terms. Don't give anybody else the satisfaction of killing you.
I've actually been playing against Joey in a game where I was trying to find a way with a Painful Truth to manipulate my mana correctly so I could only lose 1 life and draw a card.
That's right, and you had an Ancient Tomb in play that was really giving you trouble with all of that.
I feel like the Ancient Tomb is your own biggest enemy in any deck you build, Dana.
It doesn't draw me cards, but it does cost me life, which I guess is not the perfect transaction. But it's definitely taken me from 40 to 22 in plenty of games.
Indeed. But yeah, that can be, I mean, Necropotence is certainly a name because this is a potent form of draw. You get to use a huge resource, but that's not, I think, the most potent form of draw that I've ever seen. I'm talking about some cards that draw you stuff when you have a big board in play or big creatures in play. Matt, take us to our next category, do you think?
I would love to. So this next category is kind of stuff that's dependent on what's on the board, whether it's creatures, any, you know, card type in general, stuff that requires something to be on the battlefield already, which, I mean, obviously I'm on board with. So there's stuff that in green, weird that I'm turning this to on the battlefield, talking about green, but Rishkar's Expertise. Like, if we had to talk about a pet card, this 100% would qualify for me. Rishkar's Expertise is just 4 green. You draw cards equal to the greatest power of creatures that you control, and you can cast a spell that costs 5 or less from your hand for free. This does many things, but card draw is just one of them. But it kind of has a little brother, little sister in Return of the Wild Speaker, where you're just able draw a whole bunch of cards based off the biggest creature that you control. So the bigger they are, the better the spell performs. These are just wonderful effects. Like, if you're trying to just go over the top, either of these two cards are just great ways to do that.
Yeah, there's a couple different variants in this board state dependent draw. There's things like Biting the Thassa or Coastal Piracy that draw you cards whenever you deal damage to an opponent, and it's per creature, so like the wider you go, the more cards you draw. Those are really, really effective in a token deck or any kind of a go-wide swarm deck. So there's that kind of thing. And there's cards like Decree of Pain that draw you cards for every creature you destroy when you cast it. So you're going to wipe the board anyway. You might as well draw a few cards.
There's even stuff that cares not about the power of creatures that you play, but the number of creatures that you have. Shamanic Revelation, for example, is a really famous card for green. But then there's also stuff, a classic one that Dana, you will play is Minions Murmurs. You'll lose life for this one, but again, you're drawing equal to the number of creatures that you have. And that can be a really important way to have your deck accelerate even further as well.
So we talked about my favorite form of draw, and we talked about Matt's favorite form of draw, so I guess we're going to hand this off to Joey and let him talk about his favorite form of draw.
Yes, thank you, Dana, because this is my favorite. This is, you guys are just objectively wrong. This is the best form of draw. It's death draw. Death-dependent draw is the best. Skull Clamp is so good. When your creatures die, you draw cards. Multiple Land Reclamation is so good. When your creatures die, you draw cards. It's so good.
See, Joey, I thought you liked Moldavine Reclamation, not because it draws you cards, but because you get to gain one life whenever a creature's died. Like, that's the reason to be playing that card, right? Right?
That card could make me lose life, and I would still... I play Midnight Reaper. That one makes me lose life when my stuff dies, but I still draw cards. That's worth it. I will lose life if I'm drawing cards when my stuff dies, because I will make a bunch of tokens, and then they will die, and I get to be the one who kills them. So even your best attempts to remove my stuff just ends up in my favor. I love this type of draw. It's probably a little bit more specific generally to an aristocrat's strategy, but that is just how important card draw is to your deck, that you can shape it to a specific strategy that you're playing. Oh, man, I absolutely love this type of draw. How do you guys not? You're missing out.
Because, well, we already talked about why we love our favorites. You know, you can do your thing. That's allowed. It's okay that you're wrong. But there are actually, believe it or not, green spells, not black, but green, that I enjoy in this category too. So I will give it to you. There are some cool effects. Momentous Fall. Joey, I know you love your sac outlets. Somebody targets one of my big spells. Or one big creatures, I should say. Momentous Fall is just a way to turn that kill spell into some card draw and some life gain. I'm a huge, huge fan of Momentous Fall. Not even as like a sac outlet, but just like, okay, you're blowing something up. I'm going to get something on the way out. So yeah, I do agree. Yes, you're going to kill something, but I'm going to get some value on the way out of the door.
So Momentous Fall isn't the only version of that in green. You have things like Greater Good, which is an enchantment for 2/2 green, where you sacrifice a creature and draw cards equal to its power and then discard 3. That discard's a downside sometimes, but like it's not a downside in some decks. In some decks, it's a fantastic upside. There's also a sorcery speed version in Life's Legacy where you can sacrifice a creature as well and draw a ton of cards. And in green decks that are running monstrous, you know, green creatures, Life's Legacy is a very efficient draw spell plenty of times too. Even more so if you're in one of those green style decks like Joey tends to play, where putting things in your graveyard is, once again, not a downside.
I just like it. It's so wonderful to see the different variants that you get even within these different subsections, because some of them will go towards high power, some of them will go towards just having a whole bunch. And that's just the importance of, like, in my Marin of Clan Nel'Thoth deck, this is the type of draw that I love to see, but I'm not going to play as many of some of the other types that we've talked about. Rishkar's Expertise doesn't do a whole lot in that deck, but some of these other death draw effects are way, way powerful. So it just kind of always goes against, there's never an auto-include type of card, even if there are staples of the format. Sculpting the card advantage selections that you have to your strategy will pay off in huge dividends.
So we've talked about draw that like thematically matches the color where it tends to show up. So it makes sense for black to trade life for the power of card draw. It makes thematic sense for green to have its card draw tied to creatures. The impulse draw that we often see in red really thematically fits the way red plays. You have to use that thing right now. Impulse is a perfect name for it. You exile those cards and you have until end of turn or oftentimes end of your next turn to use them or they go away. It's a really useful draw mechanic and it really feels like something kind of unique to red in a way that the creature draw in green and the life loss draw in black feel very unique to those colors.
Mm-hmm. Matt, you probably have favorites in this category, I'll assume.
I mean, for as many cards as Joey can rattle off without even blinking, when it comes to the black ones, like the red category is where I really think that, yes, like you said, Dana, WotC's done a fantastic job in the past few years just giving Red ways to have some sort of card advantage without just giving them, okay, well, you just draw five cards.
Right.
Stuff like the impulse draw. I know you're a huge fan, Dana, of Jeskha's Will, where you get to exile, you know, the top X cards of your library, get to exile or get some mana as well. And if you have your commander, you get both. Like, that's a card I think all three of us have cast to fairly good benefits from it. But I think one of my favorites, just for its versatility, is Outpost Siege. That one, personally, I find myself in version one of every single draft that has red, I'm putting Outpost Siege in there just because it's the classic, you know, it's the enchantment. It sits around for multiple turns. And just at the beginning of every turn, you get to exile the top card of your library and you can play it that turn. Like, that's just an extra card draw, kind of in the vein of Phyrexian Arena, except it's in red.
That was the first red draw card I saw where I was like, oh, they figured it out. They figured out how to get red card advantage, and they figured out how to do it in a way that feels really, really red. And I'm going to be putting this in every red deck until the end of time. And that's kind of how it's gone with Outpost Siege.
And there are so many other versions of this, too, that I feel like red is able to swim in sustained card advantage. Sunbird's Invocation comes to mind, giving you extra free spells when you cast spells from your hand. Itali's attack trigger is off the charts, giving you free spells from the top of everyone's deck. This is a great way for red to not even just have the one-shot aggro stuff that we would typically associate it with, but also to have sustained duration throughout the game so that it isn't stuck top decking all of the time. This is Jeskha's Will is a revelation. So yeah, a whole lot of love has got to go to this type. It definitely feels really, really well encompassed for sure.
We've hit a whole bunch of card draw categories. Well, let's take a little breather here and maybe challenge some stats.
Yeah, I mean, what else are you going to do once you've drawn all those cards? You're going to play the really cool cards that you've drawn, right? So yeah, let's move to that, take a quick break from all of those and challenge the stats because there's just so much data on EDH Rec, but we don't always agree with it. Sometimes cards see too much play or too little play, so we like to challenge those. Dana, do you got a good challenge to start us off this week?
I do, and it is a card draw related challenge to stats.
Ah, I see what
you did
there.
The card I'm going to talk about here is Infiltration Lens. It's a one mana artifact from way back on the Mirrodin block. It's an equipment, and it says whenever equipped creature becomes blocked by a creature, you may draw two cards, and it has an equip cost of one. So it's very efficient to cast and very efficient to use. The problem with it is people are going to, generally speaking, not want to block your creature unless they absolutely have to, because drawing two cards is a lot of cards to have to sacrifice to somebody. However, there's a commander from 2014, Odric Master Tactician, who has First Strike. He's a 3/4 for two white-white and has some very, very important text here. Whenever Odric Master Tactician and at least three other creatures attack, you choose which creatures block this combat and how those creatures block. Odric decks tend to go very wide. They tend to be soldier tribal or token decks, oftentimes a combination of those two things because there's a lot of soldiers out there. Mono white also tends to struggle to draw cards. It's a perfect combination. You put Infiltration Lens on one of your 1/1 chump soldier tokens, attack with, you know, three or more creatures, and have someone block that one soldier with everything. The poor soldier sacrifices its life and you draw 8 or 10 or 12 cards. It's an amazing card in Odric Master Tactician decks, and for some mysterious reason, it's only in 21% of those lists. So I think if you are playing Odric as your commander in mono white and your deck is going wide, which it almost definitely is, you should be running Infiltration Lens and people should be running it at a much higher rate than 21%.
All right. Well, Dana, my challenge for this week isn't quite the card draw spectacular that you've pulled off there, but it is an artifact that provides you with some sustained advantage. So we'll see what you think of this one. Comes from one of our patrons, Han Shot First from our Discord, mentions Isochron's Scepter has a really fun non-infinite home in the commander Gargos Vicious Watcher. Gargos Vicious Watcher is that Hydra that can fight stuff if you target it with your own spells, which means that it is typically full of a whole bunch of little instants that let you target your own creatures. Stuff like Withstand Death, for instance. Just a bunch of little things here and there that will give it hexproof or give it a nice buff, but that also has some extra benefits to have cargoes do some extra fun things. And Isochron Scepter is a perfect thing to pair with those because you can exile one of those 2-mana or less instants onto the Isochron Scepter, and then you can cast it over and over and over again to perpetually protect your commander and to have it keep fighting things over and over and over again. Currently, Hanshot First points out that there's only 13 Gargoyles decks that are running Isochron Scepter, and since there are an average of about 10 small instants within the Gargoyles deck, it's got a lot of targets that it could use. Hanshot First, I'm really liking your challenge. This is some sustained advantage that is going to be really pesky for your opponents.
Well, this week, I don't really have a card advantage-based challenge of stats, but I do have one that actually, it's a card that we've been pretty low on kind of as a show for a while, but I do think that it's finally found a home. So if you haven't checked out the articles over edhrec.com, Jevin Lordy does a really good series called Challenge of Stats, where he basically goes through and challenges stats that he doesn't quite agree with. It's a novel idea. Some people have tried it before. Hasn't really worked for them, though. But Jevin does a really great job. He's got some great guests. He does, you know, he had One More Mana on for a recent article. He had Chase at Mana Curves on Twitter. Great friend of the podcast. She's helped it with a couple articles, too. Just really great work. But Jevin finally found a home, I think, for Opal Palace. So Opal Palace is an old, old pre-con card that taps for a colorless mana, or you can pay one and tap it, and you add one mana for any color in your commander's color identity. And then if you spend it to cast your commander, it enters with +1/+1 counters equal to the number of times it's been cast from the command zone. So it's not a great card. It's color fixing, kind of. But one deck that I really do think that it shines that he points out is in Lisa Shroud of Dusk decks. So Lisa is back from Commander Legends, is 2 white-white and a black for a 5/5 angel that says you can pay 2 life rather than paying command tax every time that you recast Lisa. And she also has flying and lifelink. And then whenever a player casts a spell, they lose 2 life. So you see a lot of life gain decks built around Lisa, but also just being able to put +1/+1 counters on a commander that is going to get targeted a lot, but you also recast a lot. Opal Palace has a chance to put quite a few +1/+1 counters every time Lisa comes back into the battlefield. Jevin points out it's only being played in 12% of Lisa decks. And I do think that this is a opportunity for Opal Palace to be played more than that, where otherwise, I think typically we wouldn't say Opal Palace is really a great card in 2021.
Yeah, it sets you behind on mana to get that advantage for the color fixing, so it's not usually a good place for it. But I can see it there, because being behind on the mana there, you're still avoiding the mana tax with that commander.
Right.
So I can see it. But also, Matt, I do have to nitpick your delivery there. You didn't have the obligatory "you are tearing me apart, Lisa" moment. And
well, I was going to say her name is pronounced Lisa, like from Sound of Music, but I don't think that works either.
I call it, I say Liesa, but I
Liesa.
I don't know, I feel like I've completely lost the thread of this. Anyway, appreciate the challenge. So, okay, in the first half of the show, we covered some of the more classic forms of card advantage, but we're not out of them just yet. And we'll go through a handful of other versions of card advantage, maybe some card selection variants out there that also definitely come up in the course of EDH games. Dana, take us to a new category. Tell us about cantrips. I mean, D&D is coming up as a set after all, and I think that that's where cantrips originate as a name, so it feels appropriate, right?
It does. Cantrips are very, very efficient spells generally. They don't really put you up cards. They don't give you card advantage. They give you, card quality basically. So like to use Brainstorm, for example, instant speed, 1 mana, you draw 3 cards and then put 2 cards back from your hand on top of your library. So you're drawing 3 cards, but you're not getting 3 cards ahead. You're losing Brainstorm and you're putting 2 back on top of your library. So it's a good spell, particularly if you're like doing top deck manipulation, or if you have ways to shuffle away the cards that you put back on top, assuming you don't need them. But it doesn't like get you ahead. So it's kind of a little more niche here.
Yeah, and Commander, when you don't have a ton of shuffle away effects, you can brainstorm lock yourself. So Matt, I feel like you're probably a bigger fan of the stuff like the Ponders and the Preordains in that case.
Absolutely, yeah. And this whole category, I struggle to say it's card advantage. This is more card selection or card velocity, like ways to get through your deck. But believe it or not, there are non-blue ways to kind of quote-unquote cantrip. Cathartic Reunion, there's a lot of different effects in red that you can discard a card to draw multiple cards. That's one of my favorites, especially in a blue deck, actually, with my Riel the Everwise deck. Cathartic Reunion, even without Riel's static ability, is just a good way to get rid of some unwanted cards and then just refresh that hand with you know, three new cards. That's the kind of cantripping that I like a little bit more than in the blue versions that we often think of.
Well, and I'm not sure if that counts as cantripping so much as a different category for rummaging or for looting, for drawing and discarding or discarding and then drawing. And in that same classic vein, you've got your Faithless Lootings as well. So it's pretty famous in red, but there's also blue versions. Dana, I know you are a huge fan of Chart a Course.
Yeah, it's an efficient way to get cards ahead if you want to get cards ahead. And if you want to put a card in the graveyard to do Joey kind of stuff, you have that option. So it lets you kind of flex back and forth, and you can make the choice about how you want to handle that.
And that seems to me, just to take a brief pause about the ways that we ourselves are playing some of these card advantage effects, the slimming down of your card draw advantage effects, Dana, in your decks, to slimming down to the Chart a Course or the Knight's Whisper. Like, you seem to really love those really cheap versions of card draw spells, whereas someone like Matt seems to really like the really big Hurricane ones, like the Vrishkar's Expertises of the world.
Hold on. What is a Hurricane spell? I need to know.
It's like a Hercules, like a Hercules recall, but it's nothing like that. It's actually completely different.
Oh, I'm just befuddled by whatever that word was supposed to be. But I do like my big crazy spells like Rishkar's Expertise, but decks need some of these lower, you know, and just mana efficient ways to kind of get some sort of card selection. Mm-hmm. Careful Study is a great card just because that's a good way to churn through and just find answers. Sometimes you can't afford to spend 5-6 mana on a card draw spell. So you need to have some sort of balance between some of these 1 and 2 mana ways, just kind of get through your deck, get that engine going without, you know, taking too much time to set up for the other things that you're trying to do, because you can't always just spend all your mana, or in Dana's case, all of your life, just trying to draw cards.
Right. But these are definitely the types of effects that are seeking to take advantage of the fact of discard. I'll play the Careful Study in a Reanimator deck, for example. Cathartic Reunion is really famous for Duretti to pull artifacts back out of the graveyard once he's discarded them direct from hand.
Well, and speaking of spells that are good at putting things in your graveyard sometimes, wheel effects are super well-known commander effects, so much so that they have an archetype and multiple decks built around casting them. The ideal use of these is because A, you want cards in the graveyard, or B, because you've kind of emptied your hand out and want to refill it in a way that's more advantageous to you than it is to everybody else.
And if you don't have $1,000 laying around, you don't have to only play Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
There's Wheel of Misfortune, and then there's Wheel of Fate, which are two kind of spin-offs of the original card, but they essentially are doing roughly the same thing for pennies on the dollar, quite literally.
Yeah, Reforge the Soul being another classic example. And I feel like we probably do have to mention Windfall here as well. Yep. Dana, I was under the impression that you actually kind of hate these versions of card advantage effects, though.
I don't. I've seen people misplay them an astounding amount of times. It's a way to put 21 cards into the hand of people who want to kill you.
Yes.
And that's very, very risky. And you have to have a plan for how that can be turned to your advantage. Because if you're just casting wheels, hoping to draw 7 with no way to kind of deal with the fact that you're giving away 21 cards, that can go very, very badly.
Yes.
Yeah, well, and I've seen it like cast into a Smothering Tithe before. The only thing worse than giving your opponents 21 cards is giving them 21 free mana along with 21 cards. But if you find a way to use them in a way that's definitely skewed towards your own advantage, they're monstrously powerful.
Yeah, I think I only play one in any of my decks, and that's Reforge the Soul in Valduk. As much as like Riel loves discarding cards, I have a Wheel of Fortune in there just because I happen to have one from years and years ago. But if I were building the deck now, I would not put it in there just because of all the reasons that, Dana, you just mentioned.
Yeah, wheel effects don't feel to me reliable enough. They feel scary to me. This is the type of draw that if I'm building a mono red deck, I'm not going to reach for any of those because I feel like we've got other options that we can pick instead. And I'm afraid of everyone else drawing a collective 21 cards that they will probably point in my direction because I'm the one who gave them that for free. So wheels feel to me like you should probably be trying to manipulate them a little bit more yourself with your own Smothering Tithes, for instance, as kind of a deck archetype instead of just a general draw spell. That's just my take, though. Kind of related to wheels are symmetrical draw effects, the Temple Bells of the world, and I guess we could also probably include the new Secret Rendezvous card in here. Temple Bell, of course, can tap to have everyone draw a card, and Secret Rendezvous is a new 3-mana white spell where you and target opponent draw 3 cards. I'm less of a fan of these as well. Is there, Matt, do you champion these? Any love for them, or...
Yeah, so I've actually kind of warmed up on Secret Rendezvous. I remember the first time that I saw it, I was not a fan at all. But if we're comparing it to stuff like Wheels, where you're giving your opponent cards, this one at least limits it. So if you're playing Wheels as kind of a draw effect and you're in white, Secret Rendezvous actually isn't so bad because you're gaining just as many cards as your opponents, whereas... when you cast a wheel effect, you're giving 3 times the cards as you get, whereas Secret Rendezvous at least is a 1-for-1. I still don't know if it's great, but I do think if you're playing some sort of a symmetrical where people are getting equal resources, this one at least is a 1-for-1 ratio instead of a 3-for-1. So I don't hate it as much because with Howling Mine and some of those other effects, you're giving out 3 cards instead of 1 card.
I mean, you're still spending the card on Secret Rendezvous, though, so I don't know. Like, they get 3 free cards, and you had to spend a card to do it.
If you're in mono white, though, you can be a little desperate.
Well, you can also control it, too. The problem with Howling Mine is you can't stop it, or you can't control who gets the cards.
Yeah.
And if there's a person who's ahead or pulls ahead, they're also going to get a bonus card constantly. Secret Rendezvous, you can control a little bit. Like, you can give those 3 cards to the person who you've made a deal with, or you can give those 3 cards to the person that's going to die next turn anyway. So like the downside of giving away those cards in Secret Rendezvous, because you can pick the person getting them, I think has a lot more potential to be less hurtful than something like a Temple Bell or a Howling Mine where you have no control over it for the most part.
All right, fine. I'll be the jerk. I think this card is not usable.
You can be wrong. You're allowed that right. I think this card, it's not as bad as a lot of people had the initial reactions of, but I also don't think it's as great as other options that you might have. I think it's a perfectly fine card, but like Dana said, like the fact that you can give it to the person who's going to die on their upkeep, it makes it inconsequential at that point. So I think there's enough ways that you can control it in white decks where it's the downside isn't near as heavy as some of the like the Howling Mine type of effects.
I don't like draw spells that cease to be good when I am down to a 1-on-1. That sounds like a spell I do not want to cast when I'm down to a 1-on-1.
That's a lot of cards, though.
3 cards to my opponent when I'm down to 1-on-1. That makes it equal, and the equal is the thing that you said you were afraid of. I hope that Wizards is interested in more than just this version of card draw for white, because I feel like this one will have a lot of problems built in, I guess. There's also a lot of other things that they've explored. Stuff that kind of enemy-dependent draw is another category that I guess we could label here. The Mangara, I feel like, deserves a sort of a shout here as another way of drawing cards in white, where if an opponent has cast a second spell, you'll be able to draw a card. And there are a bunch of other types of effects out there in the world that depend upon what your opponent does for you to draw cards. Sire of Stagnation is another example that comes to mind, where when your opponents play lands, you'll be able to draw cards. Mangara, I feel like, has also been a bit more of a dud in my experience as well, even in mono white. Dana, I'll pass it to you. Do you have positive impressions from Mangara? Is this a good experiment that you want to see more of, or was it not enough? What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to not like draw attached to creatures for the most part, to the point where like when I'm tallying up my draw sources in a deck, I don't count draw on creatures. Not that I'm not going to take it, but like, when I want to make sure I have X amount of draw effects in a deck, I just don't count that Consecrated Sphinx in my Sphinx deck, for example, because I feel like that stuff is too easy to remove You can remove that guardian project, but it's much more difficult to remove an enchantment than it is to remove a creature. So I kind of look at that like a bonus. Anything I get from a creature that draws me cards is just kind of gravy. I'm not counting on that to be something that's going to consistently give me cards.
Yeah, the fact that they're answerable, it does put a damper on a lot of these types of cards. I do agree. It's a little fragile. It's a little hard to do unless it's like an ETB type of trigger on a creature. Psychic Possession, I think, is something that is probably a little more reliable because, yes, it is enemy dependent, but it's an enchantment versus a creature. So it's a little bit harder to get rid of. And you can pick whatever opponent is that you think is going to be gaining the most card advantage. So you're able to just keep pace with them. Or if you're Dana, you select the person that's going to draw zero extra cards all game. And in that case, it's me and I draw just zero.
Until that Decree of Pain comes down and you can draw 10 or 12 or 14 or whatever. And then
that's
then
true. That's
your
true.
Choice looks brilliant.
Then we have a party and high five.
For reference, folks, they are referencing games that we've played on twitch.tv/EDHRecCast. Psychic Possession is a really good enchantment. When they draw, you draw. And there's a lot of stuff that you can definitely glean off of that for sure. So yeah, enemy dependent is a sort of thing, but that is also something to be aware of because that's putting your opponent in control in certain ways. And that can also be a little bit rough. So I kind of want to move real quick to reasons why I don't like some of the options that we discussed, Angara or Secret Rendezvous or Temple Bell, as things to pursue for Mono White, because I feel like we've actually got other artifacts out there that kind of shore up some of these problems instead. I'm thinking of Maze Mind Tome. I'm thinking of Endless Atlas. I'm thinking of Tome of Legends. I'm thinking of Sandstone Oracle. I feel like there are actually some really good cards out there for Mono White.
Well, you threw a lot of cards out there, so let's kind of cover those real quick. Tome of Legends is one that's great. You know, it comes into play with counters and you can tap it to draw cards. And then whenever you get your commanders attacking, you're going to put those counters back on there. So you're able to just kind of keep a steady flow of card draw coming with Tome of Legends. And that's one that I think both of you, I haven't had a chance to cast it yet, but both of you on twitch.tv/EDHRecCast have used Tome of Legends and it's been great just every single time we've seen it.
As kind of a barometer for how effective Tome of Legends or Endless Atlas are, I've seen them show up in decks that aren't just like mono white or mono red. And after seeing them perform in those decks, that seemed like a reasonable choice. So if a draw spell is good enough to run in non-red or non-white decks, particularly non-white, I guess, these days, if it's good enough outside that, it's definitely good enough in those white decks. That's definitely a mark of it being a successful and effective draw spell.
Well, I'm thinking also of the card Coveted Jewel. It enters the battlefield and it draws you three cards and it taps for three mana. But if someone else attacks you and goes unblocked, they will steal it from you. There are ways that you can actually be tricky with this. The new Ozgear the Reconstructor, he can exile that from the graveyard to get two copies of that card, draw six cards right off the bat, and then immediately sacrifice those if he wants to so that no one can steal them. Like, there are some clever tricks that you're able to pull off even within the Boros colors that I feel like are just absolutely terrific for folks to capitalize on that don't require some of those other sort of clunkier spells like the Rotten.
See, I'm going to take all of the arguments you used against Secret Rendezvous and apply it to Coveted Jewel. I don't like Coveted Jewel because of all those extra steps you have to take to prevent your opponents from getting that. Like, that requires a few extra moving parts versus a one shot. But like, there are different cards in this category that can shore up weaknesses without giving bonuses out.
Embrace the graveyard, Matt. I encourage you.
I embrace the graveyard, but like I said, there's just a whole bunch of extra work you have to go through to make sure Coveted Jewel doesn't backfire.
But it's
and
worth
that
it.
that's where I get discouraged.
Oh, but it's worth it. You got to sacrifice outlet right there in the command zone. I think it's great. This kind of does.
Then that means you can't always play it. If you don't like Secret Rendezvous, I don't like Coveted Jewel. We'll leave it at that.
I like Coveted Jewel in that specific type of deck. And that is kind of where I want to turn the conversation to, is that these draw effects that we've talked about, they don't just all go in all of the places. There are also archetype-specific versions of draw that can also really shape. Like I mentioned with the death draw for aristocrat strategies earlier, there are some other archetypes that we haven't even gotten to yet that have their own forms of draw all to themselves. Dana, I think you've got a couple of decks that fit these categories, like Enchantress, for example, that probably have some different examples going into all of those.
So the really obvious, way back in Alpha strategy-specific draw effect will be Verdurn Enchantress from way back in the day that's so effective. There's an entire type of deck, Enchantress decks, named after that card. It's two green mana and a colorless for a 0/2 creature. Whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you draw a card. Since then, there's been a handful of different enchantresses or cards that do a similar enchantress thing printed. So in that kind of deck, you cast an enchantment and draw two or three cards, depending on how many you have in play, or more sometimes. Many of which wind up being an efficient enchantment that you cast to draw three or four more cards and continue down that path. It's very, very effective.
And this isn't just limited to enchantress type of effects. Pretty much any strategy has some sort of card draw option like this, depending on what you're trying to do. If you're playing an artifact deck, for example, a challenge of stats that I mentioned a while back, and then Dana has actually latched onto, is one with the machine. So if you're playing artifact spells, or artifact decks, I should say, one with the machine is kind of like a Rishkar's Expertise, where it's three and a blue, and you can draw cards equal to the highest converted mana cost or mana value now, of any artifact you have on the battlefield. So if you have like a Darksteel Forge on the battlefield, it's just four mana to draw seven. So a lot of those artifact decks, if you average, five or six CMC, it's pretty reliably going to leave you paying, drawing more than one card per one mana. It's just great. Or also, if you just want a quick one-shot type of card, Thoughtcast is also great. It just has affinity for artifacts to draw two cards. So you can pay oftentimes one blue mana to draw two cards. That's a pretty great rate.
Well, on the subject of artifacts, there's also total equipment strategies out there that can rely upon the amazing cards like Pure Steel Paladin to draw cards whenever you've got equipment in play, or even equipment themselves. Mask of Memory is a card draw on hit effect that you can play in any equipment deck, regardless of the colors, to keep up on card advantage when you're just hitting people, which sounds like a lot of fun to hit people and draw cards. Matt, I think I see why you like the combat step as much as you do now.
It's wonderful, I keep telling you. Just blowing people up and then drawing cards for it. It's just getting advantage.
There's also some things that care about the tribe you're choosing. Kindred Discovery in blue, three double blue. And whenever a creature of the chosen type attacks or enters the battlefield, draw a card. That's insane in token decks, especially where you're making one kind of token. My Talran deck, whenever a Drake swings or comes into play off a spell, I draw a card. That's bonkers.
Yeah, the fact that like you can cast that and just go to combat, and if somebody doesn't answer it and you draw however many cards, that's so stinking good. It enter the battlefield or attack. A lot of people forget about the attack trigger on Kindred Discovery, and they should not forget that. At all.
That one's insane. And tribal strategies can open up tons of other doors, from Vanquisher's Banner, whenever you cast one of the specific creature type, you'll draw a card, to Distant Melody, choose a creature type and draw equal to that creature type. So once you start finding those specific archetypes, the draw options can become even more specialized. And y'all, we've only been talking about stuff that happens in the 99. We haven't even gotten to the commanders that draw cards. But that's just how cool it is within this game, that so many of these different archetypes can have all of these different ways for you to acquire card advantage and to keep up. And I just love seeing each one of those expand in all of the ways that they can.
Yeah, one effect that WotC had, like, to their credit, has done a really good job at is finding specific ways for themed decks to kind of keep pace, whether it's a tribal deck or whatever that theme of the deck is. They're tying some sort of card draw to that, which is nice to see that, something very, very specific like your Landfall deck, that's pretty specific, is able to draw cards with stuff like AC, Tyrant of Gyre Straits, because Simic needed more card draw when lands into the battlefield.
Right.
But yeah, there's a lot of different ways that just whatever the theme of your deck is, you can probably find some way to draw cards and get some sort of card advantage from doing that specific thing.
Yeah. And the main thing, the main takeaway now that we're kind of wrapping up, because y'all, that was a lot of different types of card draw, but that's how many, and we missed some. Like, there's a lot more out there. And as you get even more niche with your archetypes, you might find even other versions out there. But it's important to me when deck building to keep in mind that there are so many types of card advantage effects out there, and to diversify the options that I'm putting into my deck. There are some decks where I'll want to be very specialized, but even within specialized decks, I'm going to have a good variance. If all of my card draw effects are long-term draw, then that could leave me kind of stuck when I need a quick burst. Or if all of my draw depends upon me having creatures in play, well, all my opponents have to do is kill all of my creatures and I'm just stuck top decking basically forever. So having that variance, having a spread, is just super vital for Commander.
This is one of the first things that jumped out at me when I first started playing Commander. I remember initially kind of thinking, oh, I can just run a bunch of these like Blue Sun Zenith or stroke of genius kind of effect cards. And like, I'll get to that point in the game where I can, you know, sink 8 mana into it or whatever and draw a full grip and like jump so far ahead of everybody else. It doesn't really work that way because you need to stay alive by drawing a few cards before you can get to turn 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever. That isn't to say those aren't effective cards, because they absolutely can be, especially if your deck does something that does some kind of double duty where it can make infinite mana and you can use them to force someone else to draw and die. But if you're just relying on being able to cast these giant X draw spells to fill your hand, you're going to be in trouble surviving long enough to get to the point where you can actually cast them.
Yeah, for every Rishkar's expertise, you do need some sort of early game way to get to the point where you're casting your 6 mana spells. Like Dana said, for every alley, there's got to be an oop. So yeah, just there's a little bit of a give and take, and it takes time. Like we always say on the show, like it's more art than science. There's no formula for what your card draw suite needs to look like, because sometimes you need it built into a lot of your creatures, like Joey's necromancy decks. And sometimes, like where you're Dana, you need those short bursts just to keep you pacing, and then you can set up for your bigger turns later on. So a lot of it is contextual, and we mentioned stuff for specific types of decks, and we mentioned some more general stuff, and chances are you need both.
Mm-hmm. And again, this wasn't even with us discussing the card draw that comes within the command zone when your commander can draw cards. I think we'll have to save that for a different episode, but it would be really interesting to see how that affects the type of card draw that decks are running. Card draw is just huge in Commander, and we hope that this episode has given you a bit more tools to help find the different types of draw that might feel best within the particular archetypes or the different strategies that you happen to be playing. And Matt, when we next battle, if it ends up in a tie, I hope that we'll call it a draw.
A card draw?
A card draw. Did I not dad joke right? Am I bad at this?
You did. You did. That was fine.
That was like baby's first dad joke. That was
good. you're the little Padawan that could. You're finally learning. We're proud of you for it.
Wait, is it a Padawan?
A little Dadawan.
A little Dadawan.
A little Dadawan. There we go.
He took it from me. Well, on that absolutely confusing note, after talking about all of that card draw, how about we run out of cards in our deck and we'll call this episode to a close? What do you say? Fellas, any of our listeners want to get in touch with us, where is it that they can find you? Well, Matt, that was a perfectly fine segue. Don't even. Let's tell us, where can folks find you?
Well, you can find me at Datamus55. Mathimus55 on Twitter, M-A-T-H-I-M-U-S 55. And don't forget twitch.tv/EDHRecCast. You may have heard, we are playing games every Wednesday evening. We have awesome guests every single week. This upcoming week, actually, one of our very special editors from over at the Command Zone, Murph, is going to come on and play some Paper Magic. We're very much looking forward to that. So tune in Wednesday evenings for all the great webcam games.
And Dana.
You can find me on the Twitterbirds at Dana Roach. You can find me every Friday on the other podcast, CMVR Central. And once a month, I'm writing articles for EDH Rec and for Commander's Herald. And you can find all of us collectively at patreon.com/EDHRecCast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter. And you can find the cast at EDHRecCast on Facebook and on Twitter. And if you've got a question, you can contact us at EDHRecCast@gmail.com. Once again, we want to thank the folks from the Command Zone for handling the post-production work on our podcast. And we want to thank our sponsors, TCG Player and CardKingdom.com. You can find them using the price info links on EDHREC or by visiting CardKingdom.com/EDHREC to show your support for the show. And don't forget, you can now go to altersleeves.com/EDHRecCast and find our custom alter sleeves so you can play your deck in style while also showing your support for the show. And don't forget to stay tuned for our Patreon exclusive alter sleeve coming soon. Listeners, we'll be back at you next week with more data and insights. But until then, remember, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.